history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are without question stories there that are worth hearing. And we're never going to get to hear them unless we take a little time to ask some questions and then listen to the eye-opening responses that come back our way. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And as we journey down that path, we learn so much. We're educated, we're entertained. Often we end up inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. Here on Hometown Heroes, every weekend is Veterans Day weekend, but we have arrived at that weekend in which our entire nation pauses to honor those who have served. And it's a pretty special anniversary here in 2018. It was 100 years ago in 1918 that the war to end all wars, World War I, officially came to an end during the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month. Armistice Day would become first an unofficial holiday, then a legal holiday. Congress designated November 11th that way in 1926, and what began as a day to honor those who'd served in World War I would eventually expand to include all veterans from all wars. In 1954, Armistice Day was redesignated as Veterans Day, and instead of our normal pattern of hearing from one World War II veteran from start to finish today, I thought this Veterans Day weekend would be a good occasion to celebrate all veterans through a little mosaic, if you will, a taste of multiple veteran stories that, when taken together, underscore a reality that was evident 7 decades ago and certainly relevant today. We are a very diverse nation. Those 16 million Americans who put on a uniform in World War II represent every imaginable background from a geographic, economic, ethnic, religious, or ideological standpoint. But when confronted with enemies that threatened our country and the future of the free world, they got past all their differences and became truly united behind their common cause. I trust that you'll take time out to thank the veterans in your life this weekend, and as we listen to a few of their stories today, know that each one of these Americans whose voices you'll hear represent thousands, even millions more, who endured the same kind of circumstances so you and I could enjoy the freedom we so easily take for granted. There are so many stories that come to mind on Veterans Day, and we can't hear all of them, but you're going to hear from 3 different vets today. One Army, one Navy, one Marine Corps. They all shared their stories on Hometown Heroes within this past year. And we'll start with a recipient of the Silver Star and the Purple Heart, who I had the privilege of meeting in Las Vegas, Nevada. Bob Andre lied about his age and joined the Marine Corps at 16. He was just 17 when he survived the bloody Battle of Tarawa, and just 18 when his injuries ended the war for him on Saipan.
I was on guard duty that night from midnight until time to get up, 6 o'clock or something like that. And I'm sitting on a in my feet in a foxhole, my back against a tree, with my pistol laying on my lap. I had a .45 at that time. My pistol was laying on my lap. Nothing was going on. All of a sudden, I looked. All these guys are coming at me. And I couldn't see them, so I knelt down. I'm looking, and they were close enough. I could see they were Japs. So I start hollering, "They were Japs, Japs!" And I start firing. Well, I only had 8 shots. I always put one in the chamber. Then I put the clip in, which is 7. And so first thing I start doing is start shooting at them because they were closer than she is. And just shooting at them, you know, all around. And I ran out of ammo. And the guy coming at me, he was with a bayonet rifle. He didn't shoot, so I figured after that he was out of ammunition too. So I jumped up when he was coming at me with that bayonet. I just threw my pistol at him, and it hit him someplace. Then I jumped up and grabbed the rifle, just like I did later, years later.
Yeah.
I grabbed the rifle, and so we wrestled. Now, one of the guys in the foxhole put his carbine up underneath the Japs' area here and just unloaded the carbine. And the others, what was left, retreated. But we were on the top of a hill like that. And when I was fighting with that guy, he was on right on the crest. They start going down. Well, then all the ones that were left, couldn't see them. So I got back down the foxhole. And I didn't have my machine gun at the time. I'd lost it in a fight earlier. Anyway, I walked over to their 2 first lieutenants. One was an acting captain, the other was his executive officer. And I told him, if I had my machine gun, I could have got most of them. Now I'm 18 years old. I think I know what I'm doing. And anyway, just then, I heard a guy hollering, help, help, help. So I just jumped up, and I didn't know why, but I ran out there to help him. The one of them, the guy was holding this guy that fell back in his arm when he got shot. He was already dead, and the other guy was standing holding him. Well, I ran around to pick up his feet, and he got shot, and he went down, so I went down too. And I crawled around to him to see if I could help him. As I said, the other guy was dead. So I just started dragging him, and I didn't get shot. I got a hand grenade in my leg, shrapnel in my leg. That ended me. That was the end of my war experience right there.
So I'm guessing that I know you're a recipient of the Purple Heart and the Silver Star.
Yeah.
Those both come in that one action right there that you're talking about?
Yeah. I got the hand grenade.
Yeah.
So that was the Purple Heart.
And you were risking your own life to try to save another, thus the Silver Star.
That's what it amounts to.
Yeah. Let's fill in some blanks, though. Right before that, you're saying, if I had had my machine gun, I could have taken them out. So that situation where you're on guard duty and your pistol's on your lap and you see all these Japanese running towards you in the dark.
Yeah.
How badly were you guys outnumbered there?
Well, at that particular time, I have no idea, but all I know, there was a lot of them coming.
And you unload every round that you have.
I only had eight. I did have time to reload.
And then it's hand-to-hand combat. I mean, it's you or him.
Yeah, well, yeah, that what happened there, yeah.
Had you ever, I'm sure you trained for that a little bit, but...
No. Oh, yeah, we had bayonet training and all that kind of stuff.
Does your adrenaline start pumping a little bit?
That's why I think I went out there. I was already, I had that going and I didn't know it. After thinking about it often, why did I do such a stupid thing? Because I could see the Japs out there, all of them shooting at us. Mm-hmm. And I ran right into it. We were told not to do that.
But it sounds like you didn't hesitate.
Well, evidently not, no.
And you weren't scared during any of this?
I don't remember being scared. I was too busy doing something.
So you go to help this guy. The other guy that he was trying to help is dead.
Yeah.
Then he's wounded. And as you're trying to drag him away, what happened? You hear a noise? You feel something? What stopped you?
Well, I felt that piece of metal go into my leg, you know. Mm-hmm. And when I looked down, your body has a lot of pressure, blood pressure. Mm-hmm. And it was shooting like crazy. I mean, up high, out of the leg, you know.
So you feel something hit your leg, you look down, and blood is squirting out of there like being shot from a gun.
Yeah, yeah.
Were you starting to get scared yet then?
No. I don't remember ever getting scared.
Wow.
Ever. That doesn't mean that I was brave or anything like that. It was just, I think I was out of my mind, to tell you the truth.
The adrenaline and the intensity of the situation had taken over?
Yeah. And if I had my machine gun, and you're talking about on guard duty, my machine gun would have been in the foxhole where these other two guys were, because we have three in there.
Did I ask you how you lost it?
It was during another fight. Bullet took it out.
So it wasn't functional anymore?
No.
It wasn't like you misplaced it. They knocked it out.
I didn't misplace it, no. I couldn't use it, so they just kept it back in where we were R&R, supposedly. Suppose 1 hour or one night. Yeah.
I guess that's a question, too, and not to bounce around here, but you said 15 days of combat there on Saipan.
Yeah.
Did you guys have enough to eat, drink?
We had all the food we wanted. Oh, it was sea rations, little cans like that. Uh-huh. Tastes terrible.
You guys were aware of what was happening with that suicide cliff and what the Japanese were telling them?
I didn't have any idea about that. All I knew is that we were stopped because there was women and kids up there.
You learned more about that later, I guess.
Yeah.
So... the hand grenade hits, goes into your leg, you're squirting blood everywhere.
I dragged that guy back to a foxhole, first one I ran into, put him in there, and the corpsman came over to start taking care of him because they could see me, but they couldn't see him. They were still shooting at me. So I crawled looking for another hole going over that road, over the hill, trying to get away from their sight.
You had to be losing a lot of blood.
Well, yeah, but the corpsman came back to me, and he used my medical pack, put it on there, and then wrapped it around the leg to stop the bleeding. But it didn't stop it because pressure was so high that the blood was washing away the medicine that he put on there. And it went right through the padding that he put on there. It went right through it, and still squirting up. Yeah.
And you were still conscious?
Yeah, I was conscious all the time.
Were you in pain?
If I was, I didn't know it. I really don't remember any pain.
So what did they finally have to do to stop the bleeding and save your life?
Well, put a new Band-Aid on until it finally stopped, yeah. All I know is that I was out of the war. The Jeep came up there, and they loaded me on a Jeep and a couple other wounded guys. They triaged me there, and they said, send them out to the hospital ship. They couldn't operate on me there. So they sent me out the hospital ship, and I stayed there about 3 or 4 or 5 days, I guess, before they finally got around to operating on me.
And what did they have to do to fix you up?
Oh, it cut a big hole in my leg. It was about this big.
So you're about, six inches in diameter?
Yeah, big. It went down like a V, and the metal had hit the bone, the main bone. That's where he found it. And so when I was in New Caledonia at the hospital, they'd come in every day and change the bandage and put Vaseline gauze in there. They'd go down to the bone and they'd start wrapping it around because all the skin from here down to the bone was chewed up by that shrapnel.
Wow. So this took a lot of your flesh, but did not damage your bone structure.
No, it didn't hurt. Had it done it, I would have been in a damn cast up to the whole body, you know.
Was there some pain at some point?
If there was, I don't remember. I really mean it. I didn't dwell on it anyway. Kind of like now.
But as you're sitting there on the hospital ship or the field hospital or later on, you probably had a lot of time to think about a lot of things. What kind of stuff went through your mind?
Girls.
They're nice to the guy in the hospital bed?
The nurses weren't nice to privates. They were always with the officers. They couldn't talk to us. I'm joking. You know that. Okay. No, they treated me great. Most of them were men aboard the hospital ship. And the hospital, field hospital, New Caledonia, they were all RNs. But they had so many wounded that they didn't pay much attention to us. As far as the Silver Star, I met another one of the guys that was in my outfit, and he had told me that they put me in for the Silver Star, but they put a lot of people in for medals. In Washington, they're the ones who decide. In the Marine Corps, officers don't decide. And it has to be verified by an officer. It happened to be, there were two officers I was talking to when I went out there. And he told me about it. I forgot all about it. After a while, many months, I was finally discharged from the Marines, went home. I was home maybe 8 months or so, and I got a call that they're awarding me the Silver Star, and they want to put a parade on in Treasure Island, San Francisco Bay, and award me the Silver Star. I sent them a letter back and told them, just send me the star. I can't take time off from work. So I got it through the mail. I didn't get the parade.
Sounds like you weren't looking for the attention.
I guess so. I've told you more than I should, I guess. Just don't feel like, again, showing off or something. Because I know it's quite an honor to get that award, because I know I can pull it up on our iPhones. Uh-huh. You've done that yet?
Your citation?
Yeah.
Maybe I should, so I can read it for our listeners.
Well, you could read that, yeah.
I want to see this right now. I want to watch a 92-year-old Marine Corps Silver Star recipient pull up the citation on his smartphone. I've never done that before.
Robert Warren Andre.
Well, there you go. So this, the President of the United States of America takes pleasure in presenting the Silver Star to Private First Class Robert W. Andre, United States Marine Corps Reserve, for conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity while serving with Company C, 1st Battalion, 6th Marines, 2nd Marine Division, in action against enemy Japanese forces on Saipan, Marianas Islands, 8 July 1944. When his platoon was momentarily held up during a firefight, Private First Class Andre observed a wounded man in front of the lines. Despite accurate enemy fire, he went to the aid of his comrade, and, although wounded himself, succeeded in returning the wounded man to our lines. His courage and devotion to duty were in keeping with the highest traditions of the United States Naval Service. They thought that was a big deal, Bob.
Yeah, I guess they did. I'm glad to get back in one piece.
Is it different to hear those words about you, or have you seen them so many times it doesn't faze you?
Well, I think you described it there. It really, I read it, but I can't believe I did that.
Yeah, that's, I guess, when you think back on it now, I know you were just 18, but do you think you would do that again if given the chance?
No, being realistic, I don't think so.
You think that guy was kind of foolish or risking his life too much?
The guy that did that?
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, but I'm glad I did it.
And I'm sure the guy whose life you saved was glad you did it.
I hope so. Yeah.
You ever wonder what happened to him?
I have occasionally, but not lately. I figure if he's not passed on, he's pretty close to it.
Did you ever find out his name?
No, I really didn't.
But if that wounded Marine is out there listening somewhere, he now knows the name of the man who saved him. That is Bob Andre of Las Vegas, Nevada, who says he put some of his Marine Corps training into use in a law enforcement career that followed his World War II service. You can link to his original interview at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And when we come back, a small town in Colorado would not be the same without the Navy veteran you're going to have the chance to meet. This special Veterans Day edition of Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.